You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Andrew Lovato. He's the Santa Fe City Historian. He teaches history and communications at Santa Fe Community College. And we're talking today about Fiesta. Welcome.
Well, it's really a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you back. We've always enjoyed having you on the show when you have written these various books, including one called Santa Fe Hispanic Culture, which has a really interesting chapter about Fiesta. How and when did Fiesta begin, and what was it like in those early days?
Well, Fiesta began actually in 1712. This was 8 years after Don Diego de Vargas's death. His cohort decided that they wanted to draft a resolution honoring and commemorating his memory with an annual fiesta. And so 1712 is the formally cited beginning of the Santa Fe Fiesta.
And what was it like? What did they actually do? Do we know? Are there accounts from that time?
There are. And basically, the fiesta had a religious focus. There were masses, there were prayers, and nothing else. It was completely religious in nature.
And so there was this very important statue whom we have to the present day. Talk about the statue of La Conquistadora.
Well, La Conquistadora was a statue, a wooden statue, that Fray Alonso de Benavides, he was a Franciscan priest, and he brought it to Santa Fe as part of an attempt to help the colonizers at that time feel like they had a connection with their religion and their roots. So it was his gift to the city of Santa Fe. And during the Pueblo Revolt, La Conquistadora was one of the pieces of an icon that was taken by the Spanish back to where they fled, which is modern-day Juarez, Mexico, where the Spanish fled. And then she accompanied them back when they came in 1692 and 1693. So she's been an important part of the Spanish legacy in Santa Fe since that time.
And has been in Santa Fe unbroken.
Correct. And she has quite a legacy here in Santa Fe as well.
What do you mean?
Well, there was confraternity that in 1770 that revived the observation of her celebration. Rosario Chapel was built in her honor. And there was even a movement at one time to make a crown for her, and Santa Fe City residents were asked to donate jewelry or precious metals in order to build this crown. So she's been very much a part of the Santa Fe scene since 1625.
So in the beginning of the 19th century, the procession began. That was, I think, in 1807. So that was the beginning of, like, basically, what, carrying her through the streets?
Correct. Right. The procession that honored her, and she became the central focus of the fiesta.
When New Mexico became U.S. territory, Fiesta merged with the 4th of July into one celebration. It's sort of hard to imagine that right now, but what happened?
Well, this was interesting, and this is one of the reasons why when we look at Fiesta, it has been fluid throughout its history. It has changed and developed and gone through many modifications, so change is not new to the Fiesta. But this change in 1883 was basically a movement to try to make Fiesta a little bit more of a civil celebration and try to use it to generate some resources for the city. So 1883 is an interesting date because they celebrated in 1883 what they called the 333rd anniversary of the Santa Fe Fiesta, which had no historical significance whatsoever. That date meant nothing.
They just made it up?
They made it up in an attempt to promote commerce in the city, basically. And during that time, they thought, how can we make the fiesta more of a general celebration? Why don't we merge it with the 4th of July? This will make it even more exciting. And so they were willing to make some leeway in the tradition in order to make it more interesting in 1883. So that was a very interesting fiesta.
What accounts do we have of that? Like, did people write about it?
They did, and it's very interesting. They broke it up into 3 days. There was a Western Cowboy Day, there was an Indian Day, and then there was a Spanish Culture Day. And evidently, it was very successful, and people loved it. But it became not so much focused on the religious aspects, but it became more of a general civic celebration.
Did it still have the religious piece?
It's always had the religious piece. The religious piece is the one constant that's always been in the fiesta since 1712. There was actually a time in the early 1900s, from 1913 to 1918, that there was no fiesta celebrated in Santa Fe, mainly due to the fact that there was the First World War going on here in the city, in the country, and New Mexico is a new state, and the focus was on the war and just becoming part of the United States. So even during that period, the religious celebration continued, even though the civic celebration lapsed for those years. So the religious aspect has always been a constant.
But then the sort of combining with the becoming part of the United States first as territory and then as state made it into a kind of combo thing, a multicultural thing, a secular and religious thing. And then after the First World War, Fiesta really came under the influence of the Museum of New Mexico, among other entities. What was their interest in Fiesta?
Well, Fiesta, in many ways, related to what was happening to the state and what was happening to the city. In order to become a state, New Mexico had to walk a fine line. And it's always walked that fine line, even to this date, I think. On one hand, it was trying to promote itself as a tourist destination, as a place frozen in time, as a place where people could come and see something that was different from other parts of the United States that had a unique culture. On the other side of it, New Mexico was attempting to promote itself before statehood as a progressive state that was not behind the times and was worthy of becoming part of the United States. So both of these attitudes were part of the state, and I think to this day are part of the state, where we walk that middle ground between those two aspects.
Right, and there's a sort of a self-myth-making and a self-romanticizing that goes along with that.
Absolutely, and that myth-making is a part of our culture, a part of the fiesta, and is a part of Santa Fe if you walk through downtown.
Yeah, the kind of the myth of the tricultural paradise where everybody lives in harmony and everything is beautiful.
Sure, exactly. And, you know, that's what happens when you are commoditizing a culture or a region. There is a lot of myth-making that goes on that doesn't necessarily reflect what the location is really like.
So let's talk about the Entrada, which has been in the news a lot lately. It was finally ushered out this year. The Entrada only came into being in that period right after the First World War, when it was part of the new kind of tourist-focused fiesta. What was it? How did it come about? Who invented it?
Well, the first Entrada took place in 1911.
And talk about what the Entrada actually reenacted.
Well, the Entrada reenacted the quote-unquote peaceful reconquest of Santa Fe by Don Diego de Vargas after the Pueblo Revolt in 1680. 12 years later, de Vargas comes into Santa Fe and meets with Pueblo leaders. There was no bloodshed during this 1692 entrance into the city by de Vargas. And he basically met with leaders. They had a discussion, several discussions, and then he left again. The myth was that basically this was the true reconquest, if you want to use that word, of Santa Fe. But there's a lot of controversy about that actually being the real Spanish reconquest. Because in 1693, when de Vargas went back and came back with settlers and livestock and wagons and priests, that's when the battle occurred between the Spanish and the Pueblo Indians, in which it was very bloody. There was 81 deaths of Pueblo fighters, 21 Spanish fighters, and after that, 70 Pueblo leaders and fighters were executed.
So hardly bloodless.
Hardly bloodless. And so that's really the center, I think, in many ways of the controversy related to the Entrada, is calling 1692 the real reconquest and ignoring 1693. And I think that was a lot of what the protests were about.
But meanwhile, 100-ish years ago, this new Entrada pageant was put out there, which was sort of the, you know, Don Diego character coming in. And what was it? I mean, a parade at the time? And who invented it?
Well, it was actually a play. It was a reenactment that took place. And the actual play itself was not the idea of the Spanish people whose culture it was portraying. It was the Museum of New Mexico, mainly academics who were not native to the area, who were trying to spice up the fiesta a bit. They wanted to bring in some new influences, some things that would make the fiesta more interesting. And so this was the beginning of the fiesta change, basically, that occurred from 1911 through the 1920s, basically, when so many things came to the fiesta, like Zozobra and the hysterical historical parade and the Don Diego de Vargas and the Queen and the walk to the Cross of the Martyrs. These are all later additions to the fiesta in an attempt to make it more interesting for tourism. They were not initial parts of the fiesta. The initial fiesta was really a religious celebration and very low key.
I was reading in a document from Esteban Rael Galvez, who used to be the, I think, state historian, who was saying that the Entrada was kind of the brainchild of an Episcopal minister, and then Edgar Hewitt, who was the founder of the museum. And I mean, it really is, it's sort of odd that you have this thing that is embraced by so many Hispanic Americans that was kind of put out by two white guys.
Yeah, there's so many contradictions in fiesta. It's like there are in Santa Fe. You know, we become comfortable with contradiction because it serves us well. And so that is one of them, is one of the contradictions about the fiesta. And over the years, the Hispanic community here in Santa Fe continued this Entrada celebration. And now I've read in the news, for instance, in the newspapers, that some Hispanics in the city were saying they're taking away our tradition. But perhaps it wasn't really our tradition to begin with. You know, it didn't originate with us and was the brainchild of some Eastern academics.
Right. So interesting. How did you understand, like, when you have these conversations, it's complicated because it's like something that a group of people has really owned that wasn't part of their tradition. But then if you say, this was invented by somebody else, they're like, no, no. Like, how does that go? Like, how do those conversations go?
Well, those conversations are fascinating because if we go back to the beginning of the changes in the fiesta, for example, a lot of the local community, local Hispanics during the period from 1911 through the 1920s, a lot of the people were not happy, that local Hispanic population, with the changes, actually, because these things were being set up by the Museum of New Mexico, and the Museum of New Mexico was actually charging admission to these events. And,
right.
And the local people were saying, well, this is our fiesta and we have to pay to go to the events. And so actually there was a coalition that began with the other visitors to Santa Fe, the other residents of Santa Fe, who were the more bohemian folks that loved Santa Fe.
Kind of the arts community.
The arts community, exactly. And they, together with the local Hispanic population, developed an alternate fiesta, which they called Pasatiempo. And this Pasatiempo celebration consisted of lots of events that weren't part of what the Museum of New Mexico was developing as the fiesta. And so eventually these two merge into the fiesta we know today. So if we were to say, what is the fiesta today? It's really a conglomeration of so many influences: artists, the church, the museum, local Hispanic community, all mixing together and developing this celebration that we call the Fiesta. So is the Fiesta a Hispanic celebration exclusively? No, not at all. It's a celebration that encompasses all the different parts of Santa Fe. And I think what's happening now with the group that's meeting to discuss the Entrada, and who I have to really give real kudos to, because they've worked in a very collaborative way and have done something I think is pretty phenomenal in coming up with a positive attitude towards change and working in collaboration in a very beautiful way. They're reaching out and saying the same thing. You know, it's a celebration of the city. It's a celebration of who we are as Santa Feans. And we wanted to make this as inclusive as we can for everyone. And that includes not just what we call the tri-cultures, because that's a myth as well. Many, many cultures that are part of Santa Fe, the Jewish culture, that's a very important part of Santa Fe, the African-American culture, Lebanese culture that had real roots and celebrated Santa Fe and were a part of the changes that happened here. So
Greek.
Greek, absolutely.
Japanese. I mean, all these festivals that occur every year.
And that is Santa Fe.
Yeah.
We are not a tricultural city. We are a multicultural city. And this group that's working together on the Entrada is not going to stop with the Entrada. They want it to reflect this multicultural presence that is what Santa Fe is.
Now, during that period, albeit short period, where they were trying to charge or were charging admission to go to Fiesta, where was the religious piece of it? Was that, did you have to pay to partake in that?
No. You might think of the religious piece as the river that runs underneath everything else and is always constant. While all these changes are taking place on the surface of the Fiesta as a civic celebration, the masses continue, the prayers, the reverence for La Conquistadora, and that doesn't change, and that's continued to this day, very constant and rooted in the Catholic Church. So that's been a constant that hasn't been changed over the years.
I think one of the things that's complicated about the debates going on around Fiesta and the Entrada is that Hispanic New Mexicans are cast in the role of both the colonizers and the colonized. And, I mean, yeah, so 3, 4, whatever, 100 years ago, they were the colonizers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have probably in your own family stories of people who were punished for speaking Spanish mm-hmm. by the American government. And so being in that sort of weird in-between place is, I think, emotionally and culturally complicated.
It's very complicated, but I think that almost everyone, no matter what their background, can be cast in that middle place. We've all been victims of forces that have come and tried to change our culture, and we've been on the other side of that ancestrally. And so I think many, many people can relate to that. I think the thing that's very fascinating about Santa Fe in particular is that the native Pueblo people and the Spanish lived and worked side by side for so many generations, and their real focus was survival in this land of little rain. And there was a lot of intermarriage, and as a result, most Santa Feans who call themselves Hispanic really are a combination of Spanish and Indian blood.
Right. And now everyone's getting their DNA done.
Absolutely. And we're finding out, gosh, you know, not only that, but many of us are crypto Jews.
Right.
And so we have all of these mixtures. And the question that comes up is, who do I identify with? I have my Pueblo Indian blood. I have my Spanish blood. I have these other influences in my bloodline through DNA testing.
Did you do this, Andrew?
Yes, yes. And I found out that I have about 30% Native American blood and Eastern European blood, Hispanic, Spanish origin, and a little bit of Jewish blood mixed in there and some other things. So the question comes up, how do we identify ourselves?
Right.
And that adds a lot of interesting flavor to this whole idea of who are we and who do we represent? And when we celebrate the fiesta, am I representing both sides of my heritage? And do I acknowledge that? And here in New Mexico, when we go to Indian dances and the feast days, there's a celebration of the Pueblo Indian culture and religion, but also on the Pueblos, the church and Catholicism also. And there's a mixture there as well. So I think in the case of New Mexico, we're probably fascinating as a study as far as how integrated we are with each other.
And I think the X factor in all of this, in terms of, you know, how you identify and who you think you are at any given moment in history, is how much you're oppressed versus how much you are really free to live a good life. And a lot of people have been kind of thrown under the bus into low-wage jobs, into neighborhoods that maybe aren't the best places to live, whatever. I mean, all over the world, all over the country. But that's, I think the more you're oppressed, the more that sense of identity becomes, really holding on to that becomes very important.
Well, I think that people, that history really matters to people. You know, where we came from, who we are, where we come from in place and time. A great quote that I heard was by Gerda Herdwig Lerner. She was a Jewish Austrian-born historian, and she was a refugee of Nazi concentration, and she was an historian. And she wrote that, quote, all human beings are practicing historians. We live our lives, we tell our stories, and it's as natural as breathing, and it's as important as breathing. History is a part of us. History is how we see ourselves, our self-definition, how we relate to our community, and it gives meaning to our lives.
How does that play out? Like, that makes sense in a kind of abstract way. But then you look at New Mexico, like, how do you see that actually on a day-to-day individual level and family level, whatever, working in people's lives?
Well, I see it every day in my students at Santa Fe Community College. One of the exercises that I have in one of my classes is we do what are called cultural collages. And I ask the students to get images that represent their own culture, and then we sit and we make a collage. And then the students go in front of the class and they explain these images and try to talk about their own culture and their own cultural background. And in the process of doing that, what a lot of students start to realize is that maybe I didn't feel like I had as strong a relationship to my culture as I thought I had. There's an old saying that culture is to people as water is to a fish.
Right.
It's so much around us that we don't even see it. And it takes somebody from outside of our culture to actually appreciate it. But once one starts doing self-exploration in one's own culture, you start to see how unique and how important it is and how much we are shaped by our culture and everything around us. And once we gain a realization of that, I think that people here in Santa Fe, people everywhere, if they do some exploration, will start to see that they're a product of their culture, not just the way the food they eat and the clothes they wear, but the way they think, their behavior, their attitudes and values are instilled by their culture. And by the way, our first cultural teachers, our most important cultural teachers, are our parents, because we come into this world as a blank slate. And this gives us some kind of way of looking at the world, and it starts to make sense for us. So culture, I think, is very important to people.
So in that context, how do you, like, give us some specifics, like, what does Hispanic culture look and feel like in contrast with other cultures when you see your students making these collages, when you look at your own life?
Well, I think Hispanic culture is rooted around, well, Hispanic culture here in Santa Fe in New Mexico, because Hispanic culture is very different in many parts of the country. But here in New Mexico, I think there's a relationship to the land that's very important, a relationship to tradition that's very important. I think a lot of Hispanic culture is traditionally based around the Catholic Church. A lot of Hispanic tradition is based around values of family. It's based around the belief in hard work, because when the first settlers came up to Santa Fe from Mexico, then New Spain, they were basically an isolated colony here in Santa Fe. They had no one to depend on other than their own ingenuity. And if you were to survive, you had to know how to make it work through your own efforts. So I think these kinds of attitudes carry on, even though maybe young people don't directly think about it as being a byproduct of those early days and the early settlers. That attitude still goes through families, the idea of we need to stick together in order to survive, you know, and we have each other's back. And also the idea that no one is going to give things to you. You need to work hard and you need to make things happen from your own efforts. And I see this running through Hispanic communities here in Santa Fe in a very strong way.
Something that you said before was really interesting, namely the Spanish and the Pueblo cultures existing side by side and having intercultural contact, intermarriage. A lot of the Pueblos have churches on them and so on. And it reminded me of the work of my friend Jack Leffler, the local author and radio producer, and he's done countless interviews with both Native and Hispanic people in the Southwest. And from his perspective, he's really talked about how he sees them both as indigenous because of their very deep ties to the land here. And those similarities run pretty deep.
Oh, yeah. I think those similarities are over time. You have to realize we're talking about centuries here. People living in the same area, trying to survive in similar ways through centuries, and that there is this joining of cultures in a way that cannot happen artificially. It has to happen organically. And I think what you see in New Mexico is, and in Santa Fe, and I think that's what draws a million people a year to Santa Fe, is the product of that, the product of this unique place that Santa Fe, is it Spanish in origin? Yes. Is it Pueblo Indian in origin? Yes. Is there an influence by the artists and the free thinkers from the eastern United States intermixed with all of that? Yes. And you put it all together, and then you have something called Santa Fe style.
Right.
And that's what's so unique about Santa Fe, and there's nothing like it anywhere else in the world. And there's nothing like the Santa Fe Fiesta anywhere else in the world. And I'm very optimistic about the changes that are taking place in the Fiesta and the people involved in the recrafting of the Fiesta, that they get it. And they're going to take the Fiesta forward into a place that really reflects these incredible influences that make us who we are.
Well, and I think that that's the thing about tradition, is that every tradition just didn't appear whole. It evolved from something, and it continues to evolve. And even the things that we think of as static are part of a long historical evolutionary process. Let's talk about that, how Fiesta has evolved during the last 100 years. What was added? How has the nature of the festival changed over time?
Oh, Fiesta has changed over time in many, many ways, and Fiesta will continue to change. One thing about cultures, I believe, is that cultures need to have new input and new influences, and if they remain static, they will basically die. You need new blood in cultures. You need new influences. Many times you'll find the elders in a culture saying, we're losing our culture. What's happening to our culture? But I bet you that their grandparents were saying the same thing.
Right.
What's happening to our culture? Cultures don't remain static. They change. They're influenced by many things. And that's happening to the culture here in Santa Fe and also to the Fiesta. It's taken place during history. For instance, if we look at the 1920s, the introduction of zozobra to the Fiesta, Zozobra is a vital and important part of Fiesta, despite the fact that it isn't part of the original Fiesta. Many people relate to that event as a part of Santa Fe. In the 1930s, it becomes more established as a community celebration. And there's been some kickback from that. In 1964, the Archdiocese of Santa Fe actually withdrew from this Fiesta, saying it was over-commercialized.
Interesting.
And there's been other changes to the Fiesta. There's been the introduction of the Queen and her Fiesta celebration.
Is that fairly recent?
That happened in 1927.
Okay.
So, again, that was part of trying to make it a more civic celebration. There has been the introduction of the walk to the Cross of the Martyrs that took place at that time. And so many things have changed in small ways related to the Fiesta that we can see it as really a barometer that reflects the social and political changes of Santa Fe. So it's a reflection of the city itself.
How about the pet parade?
Oh, the pet parade. Absolutely. That's a part of the civic opening up of the Fiesta that is obviously not related to historical events.
Is that the most recent addition?
That's one of the most recent additions is the pet parade. Yeah. And it's a part that many, many people look forward to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's very healthy. I think that the more we can have our Fiesta reflect what the city really is, who the people are that live here, the better.
Well, and then there's the melodrama, which I haven't been to every year, but it is hilarious because it always kind of makes fun of everything that's happened in the last year in Santa Fe.
And that started in the 1920s. Many of the new arrivals from the eastern part of the United States were actors.
Ah, okay.
And novelists and people who loved to make stories. And that was a natural outgrowth of this new pasatiempo fiesta, to just be outrageous and to have fun. Yeah, it's become ingrained in our fiesta, and it's a great part of it. I think, you know, fiesta is in its nature very serious on one level. You know, it's paying homage to La Conquistadora, to religion, to cultural roots. But on the other hand, there's this whole other side of fiesta that's about music, food on the plaza, dancing, plays, pets, the pet parade, the hysterical and historical parade. All of that's part of what makes Santa Fe what it is. And I wouldn't want to get rid of any aspect of that. I think they're all important.
What was Fiesta like for you growing up in Santa Fe?
Well, Fiesta was a time when it was really important for me. I wrote a book about growing up in Santa Fe and the Fiesta, and it was published by the Museum of New Mexico Press, and it's titled Elvis Romero and Fiesta de Santa Fe, The Years Zozobra Escaped.
Right. I remember we had you on the air years ago talking about that.
Yeah. And one of the things about Fiesta for me was, aside from having fun, I, like many children, I think, in the city, felt a real sadness watching Zozobra burn. We felt that it was unfair, that he was being picked on, and we sided with Zozobra. And so I decided that I was going to write a little children's story about Zozobra actually escaping his fate with the help of two 10-year-old Santa Feans, two children who borrow, with quotes there, their uncle's tractor in the middle of the night and tie Zozobra up to the tractor and drag him up behind some trees in Hyde Park to save him from his inevitable fate. And so I'm not going to give away what happens in the end, but I had carried that story around with me since I think I was a child, just feeling this real empathy for Zozobra.
Very interesting. Now, if you, dear listener, are listening in Santa Fe, you know that Fiesta is coming up starting around the beginning of September, and the melodrama and all the different events are going to be going on over a period of just a little over a week. And you, Andrew Lovato, are going to be giving a TED Talk about some of the things that we have talked about. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I'll be giving a TED Talk at TEDx Albuquerque on September the 28th at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. And I'd like to focus on actually how history matters. That's going to be the theme of my talk. History is a part of us, and history is something that's not in dusty books for historians and school teachers, but it's part of all of our lives. And this is evident when we have things like the Entrada controversy, that history still matters to people. And I'd like to explore that theme. That's going to be the basis of my TED Talk.
Andrew Lovato is Santa Fe City historian. He teaches at Santa Fe Community College. Thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
And by the way, he's author of several books, including Santa Fe Hispanic Culture. And those books are available?
They're available at the museum shops around town, and you can find them on Amazon as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to The Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican. An independent newspaper since 1849, the New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.